The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody. We are keeping it live and keeping it real here at the Michael Steele podcast, and so glad you could be a part of the conversation with us today. We are getting into the book, The Persuaders at the Front Lines of the Fight for Hearts, Minds, and Democracy. It is authored by Anand Giridharadas, who is a best-selling author, MSNBC political analyst, and a buddy. You know, quote, between immigrants contribute to our culture, we're all the better for having them here. And, quote, we should put babies in cages. There is no in-between, Shankar
Shankar Osorio.
Thank you, told me. That's an on and off switch. What we actually see for persuadables is that they toggle between competing views of the way the world works, and whatever they hear repeated most frequently becomes common sense and what everybody thinks. The persuadables, she quoted, were malleable and contained many fighting faiths, in Oliver Wendell Holmes's famous phrase, and were in a constant unresolved process of meaning making, trying to alloy their what they heard at work and on the news and from their friends into something solid like a worldview. So you have these people hearing all this stuff and trying to create something with it, which is really what Shankar Osorio was talking about.
And she is such an incredible and brilliant person and a kind of firecracker. And she's on like a one-woman insurgency to flip the Democratic Party's theory of persuasion on its head. And she's making quite a bit of success, I would say, slowly but surely. And the flip is the following. I think for most of the Democratic Party's, for much of the Democratic Party in recent years, the dominant approach to persuasion has been what I would call like the pizza burger theory, which is you sort of, your base wants pizza, you mm-hmm. kind of perceive moderates in the middle want, you know, burgers. So you just offer pizza burgers. And the problem is that your base doesn't want a pizza burger, and you're actually the moderates don't want a pizza burger. And now you've sold something that like nobody wants,
right?
Right. And her theory of moderates is that moderates, first of all, you know, moderate implies kind of being in the middle or like the diluted averaged version of a thing. Anant's big insight, which is backed by a ton of data, is that a moderate is not an identity. It is a situation. It is a situation of being unresolved in between like multiple moral frames, mm-hmm. right? Which is, so if I were to say to you, you know, do you think that, and you've done these conversations with voters, I'm sure, like if I were to say to you, do you think that on immigration, we should, you know, have a totally tight border and no one should be able to come in, you know, or do you think that, you know, we should just have something like open borders? A moderate is not necessarily someone who wants the mean between those two positions.
Right.
A moderate is someone who could be susceptible to each of those ways of looking at the world, depending on the context, depending on what's happening in their lives, depending on whether they're feeling abundant or feeling scarce, depending on whether, you know, what is normative in their town.
Right.
And Anant therefore thinks about the job of persuasion as being, how do you encircle persuadable people with an abundance of messages saying, this is the normal way to think, right? And the right, once again, knows how to do that. It knows how to surround you with these kinds of phrases and worldviews so that you just think, yeah, the normal way to think about this is X. And Democrats are worse at that because they often are trying to do outreach to this illusory middle and coming up with the kinds of cold, diluted policies that bore their own base to tears and never actually get those moderates to not think they're a communist anyway. You know, so there's a place, a Knott's version of persuasion for Democrats or prescription is kind of passion and conviction-led persuasion, not dilution-led persuasion.
You would say they're not listening to that, though, in the main.
The main establishment is not. I think more and more of the movement spaces are. I think more and more of the activist spaces are. I think if you look at some of the most dynamic communicators on the left, like AOC, they're following that model broadly. I mean, there is a new theory of communication, but I don't think it's the White House's. I don't think it's, you know, Senate Democrats. No.
Right. So for the AOCs, do you think there's a lesson to be learned in that theory of communication, that how you say something is equally, if not more important than what you say? In other words, we very readily branded AOC on the right, readily and quickly. Why? Because it was easy. Right, because she threw up a whole lot of stuff that it was easy to target and go after, in, you know, which kind of boiled down to this sort of Green New Deal package. How do progressives and the Democratic Party on the whole kind of rethink that part of the messaging, so that those early traps that they used to fall into, and some would argue, like myself, they still fall into to some degree, can be avoided. And you really, I mean, it's like in any sport, when your opponent knows the play before you do it, that begs you got to change up the play. You may want to show that's what you're going to do, but when you execute, they see something else. And when that linebacker moves up, thinking you're going to do a running play, and okay, now maybe I actually plan to pass. So that's what we're going to do. How does that alignment or realignment inside of that communication structure work itself out?
I mean, let me tell you, you will remember, as will everyone listening to this, the dress. Do you remember when AOC wore that tax the rich dress to the Met Gala?
Yes.
So I was watching that the same way everybody was. And I watched, first we watched the dress, right? Then you watch the reaction online. Now, here's how I would assess the reaction online. I would say most regular people loved it, thought it was interesting, just like, you know, peanut gallery. But then among more kind of politically committed people, there were several reactions. People on the right hated it because of alleged hypocrisy, right? She's saying tax the rich, but she's going to the Met Gala where it's, you know, very expensive.
Nothing but the rich.
Correct. Right. Then there was a critique from moderates and centrists on the, you know, centrist Democrats, like, you know, she's this anti-corporate person, but she's, you know. Then there was a far left critique that this is an empty gesture. There's real Black Lives Matter protesters getting arrested outside the Met Gala right now, doing a real action against, you know, against police. She's in there just performatively gesturing and mingling with these rich people, right? Everybody from these different sides was like, and I was just sitting there watching this thing and being like, none of these people understand. This brilliant young woman got the whole United States of America to talk about her preferred three-word phrase for 48 hours. Mm-hmm. And Michael, you know, as someone who has... If you can do that,
if you can do that
in the early 21st century, that's holy good. Shit. That's holy good. Shit. If you as a 30 something young 30 year old woman, new member of Congress, can get the whole United States of America agreeing with your phrase, disagreeing with your phrase, debating your phrase. I was walking by restaurants in the city of New York. Mm-hmm. People were talking about at the tables. I went to a dog costume parade a year ago this time, and the only costume repeated on multiple dogs was tax the rich dresses, right? That is a woman who understands how to, that the first step in shifting the narrative and getting something you want done is making everybody aware and talk about it and think about it, right? And I think what you need to have happen in a lot of these progressive and liberal spaces, the Democratic Party, is to actually understand that if people are not even in your moral frame or talking about your issue, it doesn't matter what your issue is. And that means not only taking something like Build Back Better and selling it better, maybe through things like Fireside Chat, but it actually means changing what you propose, right? Like it maybe means not doing a Build Back Better and instead breaking it up into pieces and like having fights about insulin. And you know, that was one of the proposals that people were talking about, right? So should Build Back Better have been like 10 perfectly crafted fights, right? That you want to pick, right? And I think there's a, at some deep level, Democrats disdain that kind of thinking, provocation, picking fights as being like lower, like as being kind of base.
Yeah. So let's expand that out, because it really goes to, I think, when you go through your book and you lay out these stories and you're sort of sharing how, you know, some of these activists and others have sort of pushed up against the status quo. What are some of the tactics that that people have used to persuade others? And why do some of these work while others don't? I mean, because using the AOC thing, I would say I agree with 1,000% with what you said. And the interesting thing about it was, I'm curious as if, because AOC is as clever as on the left as some of our folks are on the right in Trump world, Trump himself even, where he throws up a piece of meat that he knows all the rabbit dogs are just going to go after it. I don't care how much of it they nibble. I just want them to lunge for it, right? How much of that whole episode plays itself out narratively for 48 hours if the right says, yeah, whatever?
Well, I mean, I think
and
what
just
it
let
does.
It go. In other words, don't engage. Don't take the bait as a form of tactic. And so it really kind of begs the question for me, what are some of those tactics then that we can begin to use to tactically draw people into conversations they otherwise would not be drawn into?
Yeah. So let me tell you about the experiment, remarkable experiment that is happening right now across this country called deep canvassing. And I chose to end this book with a chapter about deep canvassing. And deep canvassing is exactly what you just asked in terms of having these conversations, right? So we talked a moment ago about provocation and attention and these things, right? But there's a whole other side of it, which is how do you lovingly pull people in to a worldview that may not be their worldview right now,
right?
But that you want to live in because you want your, you know, black or brown kids to be safe. You want everyone to feel included regardless of their background or orientation. This movement of deep canvassing grew out of a stinging defeat in 2008 for gay marriage in California, Prop 8. And some of these gay campaigners, these gay rights campaigners, many of them gay themselves, kind of woke up to the stinging realization that a lot of their neighbors in LA County and San Francisco and, you know, not just in Alabama, far away, hated them or didn't think they were fully human or didn't think they deserved the same rights they did. And so these gay rights campaigners started going door to door in their own communities in California, asking people how they felt about gay people. I mean, it's incredibly courageous. By the way, it feels much more 2008 than 2022,
right.
You know?
Right.
And I want to be clear, no one has to do this. Like, it's really above and beyond to go door to door to people, you know, who might hate you, asking them why. But some minority of gay rights activists decided they wanted to do this work. So they did it, right? The same way some, you know, black activists on police violence or other issues, you know, may want to do this work. And most people may say, I do not want to go door to door talking to older white people about the police, right? So you got to do the work you want to do, right? Particularly in a country where so many people are packing heat, like do the work you want to do, you feel safe and comfortable doing. That said, these campaigners developed, starting in 2008, a process, a protocol, a formula that has since been refined and subject to peer-reviewed academic studies, where you go to the door and you do the following. You introduce yourself, you convey respect, you announce in some clear and honest way why you're there, what your stance on that issue is, right. transgender rights, racial equality, you know, immigration reform, whatever. And then you listen. And this is not hand out a flyer, 30-second canvassing. This is 30 to 40 minutes on the door canvassing, 30 to 40 minutes per wow. person. How do you feel about that issue? Why do you think that way about immigrants? Interesting. And then they say some terrible things sometimes, some bile. Mm-hmm. And unlike modern call out culture, Twitter culture that we all participate in, frankly, mm-hmm. you just keep listening. You don't call it out when you hear it. There's time for that. You got any more bile? You got any more bile? Any bile after that? No. Bile is finite. It turns right. out
people yeah, it will, is.
Like people
they
will get it out.
Out of
get,
it.
They'll get it out. Right.
Yep.
And they feel better having gotten it out. It's out. They've said, right.
Yeah, particularly if they know that's your issue and they feel like they're finally getting to tell you to your face how they feel.
And then the really interesting persuasion work starts. So then what you do is you say, do you know anybody who's an immigrant? And often people who have expressed a very anti-immigrant view in general and in the abstract will tell you that they do. Their colleague or their gardener or their mm-hmm. brother-in-law. And then you ask them, do the people you just mentioned, do they share the characteristics of laziness or dishonesty or propensity to criminality that you just described it for the overall group? And of course, Michael, they will tell you many cases that no, they don't. That's one of the best guy I ever met or that, you know. And you start to see people. It sounds simple, but you know, you start to see people crack. You can go on these videos on YouTube. I went and saw door to door in Arizona. You see people start to realize, oh, hold on, I'm in conflict with myself, right? As Beyonce says in her new album, I'm contradicted.
Mm-hmm.
And then if that works or doesn't work, you move on to the next thing, which is even more interesting, which is you take this particular issue, immigrant rights, trans rights, whatever, and you universalize it almost into a kind of Hollywood version of hero's journey version of that right. struggle. So trans rights is no longer trans rights. It's about, have you ever been treated badly because of things about yourself you can't control, right? So mm-hmm. now the trans part has been removed or abstracted to kind of a universal human aspiration to be treated well, regardless of things right. you can't change.
Hey, everybody, thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Retaliation with Julie Roginski is a weekly podcast focused on the stories of women who have spoken truth to power and have persevered despite the costs. Shares the experiences of courageous people who have sometimes been celebrated, but too often castigated for standing up for themselves and for others. Each week, I examine the structures, systems, and culprits responsible for perpetuating and promoting workplace toxicity. You'll hear stories from female celebrities, music label executives, politicians, police officers, and many others as we examine the cultural reevaluations, policy changes, and legal steps that can finally bring an end to the ongoing attack on women in this country and around the world. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.